that red light on.
Welcome to Drink Beer, Think Beer, the podcast that gets to the bottom of every pint. I'm John Hall, and this is the third and final episode that was recorded during the Little Beers 4 Festival, hosted by Goodwood Brewing in Duluth, Georgia. As I've said before, it's a seriously wonderful festival, and the fifth iteration is planned for April 19th, 2025. Get it on your calendar. This panel, which was presented live during the fest, features a trio of brewers who care deeply about specialty malt and took time out of the fest to talk with my colleague, Don Tess. But first, please go visit allaboutbeer.com. There, you can find original articles, reviews, news, insights, and podcasts. You can listen to shows like Brewer to Brewer and the All About Beer podcast, which Don Tess co-hosts, simply by searching All About Beer wherever you listen to shows. Don't forget, you can follow All About Beer on Instagram, Threads, X, and Facebook at All About Beer. And to keep up with all of the smoked beer news and releases, make sure you check out This Week in Rauch Beer. You can either search the group on Facebook or follow at TW Rauch Beer on X, Threads, and Instagram. Don't forget, there is some limited edition glassware and apparel available just by going to allaboutbeer.com/merch. This show and all of the work we do, it's supported by you. Please go visit patreon.com/allaboutbeer. A few bucks goes a long way to help keep the content fresh and to fund writers, photographers, creators, and editors. And if you'd like to learn more about advertising on this show or any of our shows, please email info@allaboutbeer.com. And with that, I'll let Don Tess introduce you to his panel who brew with specialty malts and then take it away from Little Beers.
Brett Schweigert is the head brewer and co-founder of Odd Colony Brewing in Pensacola, Florida. He began his fermentation journey on the south slope of Asheville, North Carolina, where he was immediately immersed and inspired by craft beer with a sense of place, its direct tie to the season, and inherently the wild spaces we call home. The confluence of nature and fermentation truly inspired him, and that ethos followed him back to his hometown, to the Panhandle of Florida, where he helped start up Odd Colony Brewing in 2019. They recently expanded into a second location, the Burrow Beer Garden and Kitchen. Odd Colony Brewing is focused on farmhouse-inspired beer with a heavy focus on seasonality. Their approach to beer is fully led by this ethos as they attempt to work with as many regional ingredients as possible and simultaneously brew beers that are fitting to Florida's notoriously hot climate. Amanda Cardinale is a founder, owner, and production lead of Atlantic City, New Jersey's based The Seed, a living beer project. Amanda has been brewing professionally for over a decade, and during that time has developed a tremendous passion for the marriage between local ingredients and fermentation. Whether it be through local grain-focused lager or local agriculture-focused mixed-culture beer, Amanda uses The Seed to build a community and ethos focused on embracing, preserving, and sharing the bounties of the local area. Always advocating for focused and intentional ingredient selection and a similar attention to detail on the process side, Amanda is a beacon of the local ingredient movement in the tri-state area. Outside of running the brewery, Amanda loves spending time adventuring with her dog Brett, hiking, traveling, expanding, and caring for a never-ending collection of houseplants and reading. Seeds Brewery just celebrated their third anniversary. Seeds Brewery is located in Union Pier, Michigan, and is an agricultural-driven brewery using locally sourced ingredients from the Midwest. Seeds specializes in delicate lagers and ales and mixed fermentation.
All right, so thank you for your time. Thank you for taking 45 minutes out of one of the best beer fests. 35.
I didn't know it was that long.
15 minutes out of one of the best beer festivals in a very long time, right? How awesome is this?
Absolutely.
Sunny day, but we are here at Little Beers, as the name implies. They are low ABV beers, low gravity beers. So I wanted to ask how you think about, you can't just hide behind dumping in a bunch of hops. So obviously the malt is more forward in these beers. How do you think about malt? How do you construct a beer for low ABV? And maybe we'll just start with you and we'll go to the left.
Let's go in line. I think obviously balance is something that every brewer strives for when building a recipe. I think it's all the more critical with a table beer, little beer, because of the you know, mild nature of it. So I think balancing those out and kind of building body is a huge component. So malt, such as the panel that we're on, is a giant element. And so, you know, depending on what we're at, we like to build a little bit of body. Still, we still like to layer in that complexity. And if that's with hops or with different malt, you know, different malts, then so be it. So, yeah, I think malt, it's for us, it's first finding which malts are going to build that body up and then how we can layer in complexity to really add to a really sessionable but really delicious beverage.
Amanda?
Brett, you did a great job.
Thanks.
great work.
I mean, you said it. But, yeah, I mean, I think it kind of depends on the style, too. So, like, we use a ton of New Jersey-grown and malted grain. So we kind of work off of that. We do focus a bit on English beer. So that is; those are really the only beers that we don't use a ton of New Jersey grain. So we've gotten really comfortable and familiar, like, being able to build small little beers with Rabbit Hill grain. I feel like you really like balance. Like, I feel like we all really preach balance, and being able to make a like full-bodied little beer is pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ryan?
Yeah, just like Brett and Amanda said, it's all about balance. But we also like to we specialize in like saisons and lagers, and using the local heirloom malt that we could do. It, those styles get to really showcase what the malt is when we don't really focus on hops. So use the hops more of a balancing act. So we're privileged. We use 100% local from Sugar Creek, and then we use local raw corn, raw wheat, and raw rye from Grainer Farm. It's an organic farm. They're great. And just with that, it's kind of, we get to showcase what essentially like the wine, the terroir of the local agriculture. And we get to showcase, and it, to me, it helps when it's local, and it they're not very consistent, so it changes from batch to batch.
And you lean into that.
Thing.
Yeah, so it's like, it's kind of more fun where we get to, we only control so much, and then we let the yeast and the malt and then everything else kind of do the rest.
So you've all sort of touched on my next question, which is that you're sourcing ingredients locally, and, you know, craft beer is itself kind of a niche industry, and then even small beers and lagers and saisons is even more niche within the niche. I think that the malt industry has been set up, has really been driven by the big brewers. Big malt is not ideal for the beers you guys make. So if you could maybe talk about why it's important to work with local farmers and maltsters, how that malt is better for what you're doing, how it contributes more flavor as opposed to just extract. And maybe we'll go in reverse order now. We'll start with Ryan and then come this way.
That's kind of like a long question. Yeah. So it depends like how deep you want to get. So the first, I would probably say, if you want to go more to like the growing aspects of the farms, so we use majority Sugar Creek. They're in Lebanon, Indiana. They're great. And I was talking with Brett a little bit. They use Riverbend. But a lot of these varieties, I know Sugar Creek they grow, is their winter barley. So it's also going back on the climate conditions and the growing conditions, but they get to grow it into cover crop. So they're getting a harvest of their malt through that. And then they could also in the spring do beans and grow other things as well. So it's kind of like a dual purpose. So for us, for me, the way I look at using the local malts, there's not as only like driven for like the farmers and the production, but it's also like the economical for your whole area that you're in. Instead of getting it imported from other places, it's like local, and we're keeping that in our area versus kind of, and it's fresh. We know it's like they're harvesting it, they're malting it, and it's like right on the spectrum. And like we use a lot of like their under modified pills that we kind of customize to our brewing specs, and then same with Edelweiss. So we only do our Czech lagers with that. Where we have to do, they modify it the way they want to do in the malt house, but we have to control it the most in our brew house and kind of get to go. And
you like having that control then?
I love having that control because it's, I mean, we try to make everything consistent, like I said earlier, but it's just, it's on the harvest year and everything else. It'll change from beer to beer.
do you think it makes your beer better? Like, you're supporting the local economy. Yes, you're supporting local farmers. Is your beer better?
So that's a just because you buy local doesn't mean your beer is going to be better. But
hallelujah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But like I said, I have trust in our maltsters that we use and all of our suppliers that we pick. And with them, I have the trust in them where we've been working. And that's the only way local malt could get better is the more we work on it together. So like the way I always like look at it is like Wireman and can't think because I don't use much anymore. Like but it's like these maltsters all had to start somewhere. And the way I look at it is like we got to help the local maltsters. And that's the only way we can make better beer and they can make better malt.
Right.
Is by what we have to communicate with them better, though.
Yeah. Amanda?
Yeah, I mean, so we opened our brewery with Saison as a focus. So for us, it just kind of made sense. Like, I feel so lucky to have Rabbit Hill in our state, and I have such a great relationship with them. Like, being able to just text Hillary, like our farmer malter, and like talk malt with her is amazing, and now we've just became like really great friends. You know, with a focus on Saison and using something local and to season, it just kind of really made sense for us. And then we just really fell in love with their malt and building that relationship with the farm. And like, we've become to the point where like, she'll be like, hey, I have this new Vienna. Do you want to try it? You have to. I threw it on your palate. And I'll be like, okay. Like, so our beer that we did together was the first time we ever used their Vienna. And we made a Vienna lager. Yes. And she was like, wait, what? And she's like, do you want to try it? And I was like, no, I'm going to go for it because I trust you. And I know it's going to be amazing because you're amazing. So, like, I feel like that relationship is just, like, absolutely priceless.
Yeah. Yeah. Brett?
Yeah. Now I see the challenge of following up after the first two. I think playing into what both of them said, I think we all kind of romance the idea of Saison. I think that's a lot of our origin stories, and obviously we've evolved and taken on new styles and kind of taken that ethos and kind of bled it into other styles as well. But I think at the very least, as my beer spills, I think we're all very curious creatures. So I think one cool thing with craft maltsters is you have that opportunity to, like Amanda said, try out new experiments. If it's something that they just finished and worked on and you have that direct relationship, you have this connectivity to the maltster, which connects to the land, and you have this story that's kind of like inspiring you to kind of take things further. Because I think we're all chasing nuance. I think more or less we have, you know, a lot of the beer styles we brew are going to be somewhat similar, but if our malts, our craft malts, each of our individual craft maltsters that we work with that are at least the most geocentric to our breweries, I think we can all come up with something that's unique to our land, our space, and the people and the community and the region that we work with.
Right. Love that.
Well, and going on with that, like I was just talking with Caleb, our maltster we use, and it's like we're not trying to replicate these old styles. It's just a guideline. So using our local malts, it's going to be a little more cloudier. It's going to be a little more fuller body, like at least for the styles we do.
For sure. We talk about that too. Like, we're not trying to copy something. We're inspired by other styles, but we're making them in our way.
Perfect.
Yep.
Love it. That was actually going to be my next question, is that are you when you're talking to the maltster, are you trying to get them to make a European malt for you? And the answer is no. How interested or uninterested are you in barley variety?
I'm a lot, because that's, so from my understanding, the way, so we do Edelweiss, which is just Czech inspired beers that we do. It's inspired from the Hana region. There are two varieties of the malt, but they're like the land race where they don't have any names.
Oh.
So this goes back back, like ancient times. Like, so the last time this heirloom variety was grown in the United States was World War II. So it's kind of more fun of,
and
like,
sorry, what was the name of that?
It doesn't have a name. Yeah, it's like
sorry.
Two,
it's
but
the
it's
nameless.
Like, yeah. But for me, it's like, that's a cool thing, because they're the one that approached us and they're like, hey, we have this. Could you do something with it? Or like, yeah, sure. Sounds great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just kind of great. If, like, the way I always look at it is like we'll do the production, let the maltsters. We're not. We were talking earlier. It's like we don't know the specs. Like, just based off communication, we know the specs. But like, yeah, we're here just to brew the beer. Like, we're the blank canvas, and they're producing the paint and everything else for it.
Barley variety, do you care? Does it matter?
I mean, I not particularly. I mean, we're pretty open. Like, I would say Hillary now has like a decent amount of varieties of things for us to choose from, but I'm like, whatever she has, I'm willing to try.
Sorry.
There you go.
Thanks. Brett, you carry on.
Yeah, so I think same. It plays into the curiosity thing again. Working with the Riverbend and them, kind of like a lot of times they give you the specs of what you may expect from that particular malt. And it's not that we're necessarily looking for anything in particular. I think we look at that, and then I think that gives us the confines to kind of build out whatever idea comes to mind. You know, sometimes working in reverse, maybe we have an idea for a beer. Maybe we have time for a picture. But yeah, I think sometimes an ingredient gets tossed into our laps, and then we work from that way. And then the other way, sometimes I think we build out a beer and then say, hey, this ingredient could work great in it. So kind of working in both spectrums. Okay.
So you kind of mentioned that you get what's kind of tossed in your lap. And, you know, obviously with small maltsters, they're working with a smaller number of farmers than the big maltsters do. And so the raw grain that they're getting is of more variability, if that's fair. And therefore, I assume that the malt they deliver to you has more variability to it. How do you deal with that as a brewer? Brett, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, core, I think it's great.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's variability, but I think it's still, like, in the ballpark, and I feel like you can adjust things after the fact. But, yeah, I think all of us being Saison-adjacent or Saison-inspired breweries, at least from our core, from, like, what initially interested us, I think we are open to variability, and I think that's what excites us. We're not trying to stock Publix grocery store shelves. We're trying to make unique beers that are tied to a certain time and place. And I think being open to that kind of is kind of a beautiful thing. Yeah, it's nice.
Amen.
I mean, for real, like, that's why our name is A Living Beer Project. So, like, that we kind of, like, thrive off of that. Like, things are constantly evolving, changing. Nothing's going to be... One time you're going to have this beer, and the next time it could be the same brand, but it's going to taste a little different. And, like, we love that.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to twist it a little bit because I think it's grown to with the way we use more local grain is because I love more of the agricultural side of it, where it's, like, we also got to start work, like, focusing on, like, what could grow and what climate and where it's developed. Like, we use the ancient wheat icorn. And the reason why they stopped growing it is because it was horrible yields. So then they flipped it out for red wheat and white wheat. And that's kind of what I feel like a lot of the base malts are coming to, is what grows great in what region.
Yeah.
So a lot of these malts we're using, they grow great in our region, but they're also under-modified. Our maltsters they could try to like malt it and make it more easier to conversion, but you can't. And that's why it's more on the brewing side. And that's what I love, because then it's like we get to work a little harder.
You know, we're talking about malt, showcasing barley. How do you typically use just one type of malt in your beers, or are you trying to, you know, are you adding caramel malts and other things to try and add an extra character, or you know, sometimes simpler is better, right?
I think it depends on the beer too. Like we they would have done it anyway, but I like to think that Rabbit Hill grew spelt because of us. So we definitely like to, like, throw in different varieties, but we'll also have plenty of beers that are basically 100% Rabbit Hill Pilsner malt. So it kind of depends.
Yeah, I feel the exact same. I mean, depending on the beer, like we brought a Czech Pale Lager that's really low gravity. It's like 3.9%. So on that one, we decided to add, you know, a little bit of different character malts. We added a touch of Munich, approximately like 10%. And as well as some like some chit malt to kind of just kind of elevate the body a little bit to give a little bit more for us to work with in regards to the hops. But yeah, it really depends on the beer. We also brought English beer, which obviously we have some crystal malt. And again, it's building that body and it's kind of like leaning into whatever style that we're in, that we're, you know, producing.
So. Ryan?
Just add smoked malt to everything. It's great.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the answer.
That's it.
This is when the ratings go down.
People tune out now.
What was the question?
Oh, just is there always temptation to add a whole bunch of different specialty malts to, you know, add layer of complexity or simplicity better? Like, how do you think of different types of malts in a beer?
That's hard. I don't know. I'm like the great like grandma pizza where it's like margarita pizza is the greatest, less is more.
Yeah. So simple is good.
And just let it showcase so we're spending more money on local malt. Let it showcase is the way I kind of look at it. Like we use like one or two, like a base malt, maybe a little Vienna or Munich, depending. Mm-hmm. And then our Saisons, it's always wheat and spelt. Add spelt. That's
spelt.
For
spelt
a Saison. Yeah, more spelt.
Yep.
More spelt.
What we do for our Saison.
Smoked malt. You've all kind of touched on, you know, balance and body and things like that. I think a lot of people think of malt as, you know, contributing. Well, first of all, it's the carbohydrate, but also contributing, you know, bready or malty flavors. But how do you think about malt in terms of body and mouthfeel and texture? And how do you work with malt to get that?
So the other beer we were supposed to bring was English Mild. And so a lot of these maltsters, and I'm not entirely certain, but I believe that Amanda and I touched on it. I think Ryan's the same, like where a lot of these craft maltsters don't necessarily have the specialty, like the higher kilned, you know, crystal malts and roasted grains. But so I think we do oftentimes have to use, you know, more European malts there. And with our English beers, we typically do go completely European malts. And so for our mild, we like to, you know, I think at first we want to build that body. It's about a 4% beer. We layer in some chocolate, some pale chocolate to kind of give, again, that's a flavor contribution, but it also adds a little bit of more unfermentables. We also mash a little bit higher. You know, there's a lot of, you're controlling a bunch of cogs to make this thing. We also add a little bit of amber malt and crystal, and all of those I feel like play their unique parts. I feel like amber kind of like, you know, I don't know if y'all feel the same, but I feel like our English malts give almost like a fruity character, and even further enhanced by we use Boddington's yeast, and that also has like an ester profile. So I feel like amber malt almost gives like a touch of dryness to it and kind of like reels it back in for us. Yep. And then of course you're obviously integrating hops and everything else, but I feel like each malt has its own contributing factor.
Not just
and it's
flavor,
kind of this,
but in its,
yeah, and flavor and balance and kind of what, you know, that's always like an evolving, you know, ratio, I guess.
Right. Right. Yeah. Amanda.
it's so hard to follow. I'm like,
I know, following
is not
fun.
You're saying like
spoke for all of us.
All
can I start
things, you know, like,
on everyone?
This panel is funny because I feel like we all have been talking about like malt now for what feels like eternity.
Yeah, we're all kind of synchronized in a lot
like,
of our viewpoints.
Yeah, it's really funny. For us, I would say the first thing, when you asked the question, the first thing that came to my mind to add a little like depth and texture and complexity was we started decocting all of our pale lagers, just single decoction, and I feel like that kind of took them to like the next level. Like I don't Sean and I joke all the time because we're on a very manual system, so our decoction is very manual and sweaty and like a little dangerous, So we're like, is it worth it? I don't know, but like we think it is. So I'm gonna like forever and ever, that's gonna be our protocol for pale lager. So that also, like, we weren't doing that to start, but we're like, something, I think something's missing, and that's the route that we took to kind of fill that void.
Yeah, love it.
I agree with that. Decocked everything.
Same.
My employees hate me a little, but yeah. It's fun now. It's just a fun, sweaty day.
Well, and yeah, decocked everything, or it's like I'm not giving all my free shout-outs or all the easy stuff or all our secrets. Let me rephrase that. But it's like for us, like chip malt. I always like adding a little chip malt, or that's why we use a lot of local raw other malts. They use all raw materials. So we're getting more of like the raw wheat, raw rye, buckwheat. And that kind of helps, in my opinion, helps fill out body when it's not fully convertible.
I want to talk to you about buckwheat after this.
Yeah, don't do buckwheat. It's a mess.
I only have once, and it was like the worst day of my life.
It turns like maple syrup.
Yeah.
Like, because we always do a cereal mash on some of those.
Yeah.
And it, like, I was like.
It was terrible.
No longer.
One and done.
Okay. That's all I needed to know. Yeah. That's all I needed to know.
You're always leading me into my next question, right?
Yeah.
Ryan's good like that.
How do you think about non-barley grains, and how do you utilize them for flavor, body, whatever? And
I mean, I think it's great. Our flagship beer, we call it Mitten Life, and with that, it's 100% local, 100% from Michigan. So going all over the place, that was hard to get. Finding 100% local corn and then the barley, but we also use local hops for 100% with that. So we use a lot of raw corn. That's like our American lager we like to do, so it's great. I love it. I think it's great. We always wanted to try to do, because our another maltster, they use malted corn, and I always wanted to try the difference between malted corn and raw corn, but talking back and forth, they're like, there's something about it that it just adds to the beer versus malted. So
that's fun to know. Just made our first corn lager. Like, we're doing a light lager this year. And I, of course, texted Hillary, like, last minute. And I was like, I need corn ASAP. And she was like, well, I don't have any malted. I'm like, well, I'll just figure it out. Just throw a couple bags on the pallet. So it's still in the lagering tank. So I'm
nice.
That's
can't wait to try that.
It's good to know.
Ship me some, please.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, and so I think we do the same. So for small. Wow.
Yeah, you're good.
All right. Hey. For our beers, I think, like, I just think of, in these questions, I got to pull one particular beer and work off of that. But so I think of our five grain Saison. It's basically just DuPont. It's clean, it's spicy. But then we had, it's a low gravity beer that's fermented to very dry. So we have wheat for body, we have oats for body and texture, and obviously texture from wheat as well. We've got a little bit of Bloody Butcher corn in there just for like nuance, complexity, almost cool baking spices that riff off of the kind of like phenolic character that you get from the yeast. And then we also have some Carolina rye that adds like a nice like zippy tie in there. But yeah, I think each malt adds a little bit of body and layering and complexity depending on the beer, but that's just one particular one.
And you're all choosing these grains again because they're locally available, is that the reason? A bit of both, like there's something that you want, you can ask for it, and something's available, so you use it. Is that?
I mean, for the most part, our relationship with Hillary now, like we would have like a round table eating pizza in her brother's kitchen, like, what do you guys want to try? And we'd be like, well, what do you want to grow? So now we have like a little plot that has a few. I mean, she's growing like triticale and purple barley and like a few new things for us. That's super exciting. So yeah, I mean, I'm basically open to whatever she has for me. I will incorporate whatever she's willing to give me into something. Or like if something is kind of like slightly off her spec, she'll be like, hey, I have what's called Mystery Munich, somewhere in between light and dark. Do you want it? And I'm like, of course I do. Like, I'll figure it out. It's going to be fine. Like, it's not going to be bad. She's like, yeah, it just didn't turn out the way I wanted. I'm like, and that's fine because it's still going to be great. Mm-hmm. So, like, that, I don't know. There's something special about that.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Mine's for, I guess, building what's available, but kind of like Amanda was saying, it's like relationships. where it's like I know everyone's family, and it's kind of fun. Like, I think it's kind of cool we all get to have a living by brewing beer. It's like one of the greatest things, and it's kind of cool that we could also help another local maltster also have a living by doing that. And essentially it's like we can't do that without them. Mm-hmm. Or we can't make our living without them, and then they can't do that without farmers. So that's
our,
my
yeah,
big
our beer wouldn't be our beer without their malt.
Right, and it's like we don't do anything really special besides use local malt and thyme.
That's not true. Your beer is special.
But it, but I mean, like, we're not doing any, we're not doing anything different than other breweries. It's just my opinion is the local malt is what puts us on different levels of everybody else. Is more of like, you're not gonna, you, I don't feel like you could replicate our beer. Like, we give you a recipe, but without that local malt, it's not, it's all gonna be different. It's like I always like winemaking, where it's like the terroir.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. You know, I think when people get into beer. Well, I think the craft beer industry was largely built on IPA and pale ale, and, you know, beer geeks have favorite hops, and, you know, malt is kind of the forgotten ingredient in many respects. What do you wish beer drinkers appreciated about malt, or could understand about malt more?
I think it's, the way I look at it, it's like almost like just, I want the consumer to trust us. Is like, it doesn't matter what beer we're going to produce, is we're trusting our maltsters to give us a product, and then I want the people to trust what we're doing. So it doesn't matter if it's a hazy IPA or a lager or a Saison or a pub ale. Whatever we want to do with the malt, hopefully, like, the way I look at it, it's like, I don't want to make, like, amazing beer. I just want to make consistently good beer with every beer style. Or, like, we don't want to do that with one beer style. So for me, it's more of like... just have people trust us. And if we come out with a hazy or whatever else, like, you can still have cool grain in that.
For sure.
For, and I think it gives kind of even a funner mouthfeel for some of the beers.
Yeah, absolutely. We put Rabbit Hill in almost every single beer we make. So even our hazy IPAs have their malted red wheat and their malted oats, and sometimes their Pilsner. So, yeah, I mean, same thing. Like, I feel like we're trying to... There will be times in our tasting room where we don't have an IPA available, which used to really, like, upset my staff, but now they actually, like it, because then it gives them a chance to teach someone something new and make someone try something that maybe they wouldn't have tried if we did just have an IPA on tap. And I think that's been, like, really fun for me and Sean to watch. Like, maybe the guy that used to come in and only drink IPAs is now drinking Saison and lagers, and that is, like, a very proud mom moment.
Yeah.
You created a monster.
Yeah. Proud mom moment.
That's my plan all along.
I think, yeah, obviously malt, like you said, it's maybe not as sexy as hops, but I feel like it is kind of, it does provide, you know, the bass line to the band, to the song. And I think it's okay that it does that. It provides cadence for the rest of the beverage. And I also believe that it's okay that it's not the most sung about. It's like the deeper you dive into it, the more that we have the opportunity to kind of romance it on social media or whatever outlet that we have. I feel like it's pretty special to see the consumer kind of buy into that, and maybe not even talk about it, but they're going back for that beverage. Like, we have a Czech Dark Lager, and I feel like Czech Dark Lager's had this huge resurgence. But again, going away from that, we're in Florida, so dark beer is kind of scary to folks.
Right.
Yeah. But I think, you know, with beers like that have malt complexity, and if you can kind of like, look at that bead. And you can kind of romance it, and you can kind of, you know, show them the special nature of what you're doing with those beers. I think it can be a cool thing, a connection with the guests.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. I'll let you get back to tasting beer.
Thank you for having us. I appreciate this.
Thanks for caring about malt.
Yeah. I love malt.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Really, thank you so much.
Drink more smoky beer.
Eat more sandwiches.
And eat a lot of sandwiches.
Yeah. What's your favorite sandwich?
One in my hand.
Why are we not prepared for this?
Oh, that's a good one. Pastrami or Reuben?
Mm. Italian.
Bon me.
What's your favorite sandwich?
We got another Italian in the...
Leia?
Thank you so much.
All right, Amanda won.
Thank you.
Good work, team. Yay.
We did it. We survived. Let's go shotgun a beer.
My anxiety's through the roof.
One, two. Yeah. My heart's going to explode.
Thanks.
Okay, a quick programming note. Little Beer 5 will be held on Saturday, April 19th in Duluth, Georgia. Get it on your calendar and as part of your travel plans. And our thanks to Todd DiMatteo and the City of Duluth for the hospitality and the ability to record this episode. Next week, we're going to shift gears just a bit as I plan to head to Nashville for a trio of conversations from Embrace the Funk and Yazoo Brewing's annual Funk Fest. I hope you'll tune in for that. In the meantime, if you need to reach me, email's the best way. It's John Hall. That's J-O-H-N-H-O-L-L at allaboutbeer.com. Get in touch with questions, comments, or guest suggestions. A reminder, please go visit allaboutbeer.com where you can check out the podcast page, the merch page, and read great new content, as well as the archives going back to 1979. And you can also follow All About Beer on social media at allaboutbeer. If you're interested in supporting journalism in the beer space, like what we do, please email us at info@allaboutbeer.com to learn about advertising, or go to patreon.com/allaboutbeer to support us with your donations. Don't forget about the All About Beer podcast channel. Search and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Steal This Beer inexplicably still has new episodes every Monday, and the BYO Nano podcast happily comes out on the 15th of every month. And don't forget, go check out probrewer.com each week for original articles from the All About Beer team. As for this show, Nate Weber does the music, Jeff Quinn designed our logo, Don Tess sat in the host seat this week, but I'm still John Hall. And new episodes release every Wednesday. And that's when I'll be back again to drink beer and to think beer.